If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Recording.
Hello and welcome to the Apocalypse Podcast. I'm Stuart Miles. This week should have been IFA, the big German technology show that the rest of the team and myself go to every year, Berlin, to eat Bratwurst, Currywurst, lots of beers, and well, cover some tech stories at the same time. But because of the general situation around the world at the moment, IFA has kind of been reduced. It's now, well, I think you're allowed 600 people maximum, piling into a small hall. Yeah, we didn't really want to go, and lots of other people probably felt the same way. However, that hasn't stopped lots and lots of companies announcing new products, new initiatives, new technologies, and new, well, everything. So here to talk to me this week as a special longer edition about IFA is Apocalypse's Dan Grabham. You can say hi, Dan.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Hello.
And Apocalypse Rick Henderson.
Hello.
Who have been covering all of the big announcements and seeing all the big layers and are here to discuss everything with us. So my general feeling of the show this week has all been about the technologies powering tomorrow's technologies, tomorrow's gadgets. Let's start with probably the big announcement, Dan, from that side of things on the laptop side, which is Intel. Tell us more.
Yeah, so Intel have been quite busy. They've struggled in recent times that, you know, they haven't been able to get their true next generation processors out, and we're still expecting those. They've been massively delayed. So what we've got at the moment is the new 11th generation core processors. So we, you know, on the streets there'll be Core i3, Core i5, Core i7 again. But essentially they're a refinement of what's gone before. They've developed some new transistor technologies, which basically means they can have less leakage within the chips and basically make them more efficient. The big news though is that actually this will lead to a whole slew of laptops over the next month or two or three. You know, specifically from Dell, for example, we'll see their whole lineup refreshed, for example. And we've heard that ASUS are doing the same, Acer are doing the same. One of the interesting things, though, that this time they've got a sort of new sub-brand called Intel Evo.
Right.
And basically, this is going to be a sticker on laptops.
Another sticker.
Another sticker. We've seen this before. You know, in the early days of wireless technology, there was Intel Centrino, which some people may remember from like 2003, 2004, and that basically meant that your laptop had what decent wireless connectivity. Now things have moved on a stage. They've talked about this sort of specification for thin and light laptops, Project Athena, in the past. In the recent past, but actually they haven't had a label for these laptops. They're now going to have this label, Intel Evo. And essentially it means that they'll start up quickly. They'll have at least 9 hours of battery life. So it basically is a sort of minimum standard for laptops that, you know, you can do anything with essentially.
Now, Intel seem to be fighting a battle on multiple sides here, obviously against portable devices being powered by Qualcomm, which are kind of more using different silicon, aren't they, and a more sort of always-on battery life, but also Apple coming in from the MacBook Pro side with their own silicon. Does this new set of chips, you know, new set of processors give them the powers and tools they need to be able to tackle that fight?
Well, in terms of performance, yes, they should be, you know, more than adequate to cope with the demands of today's, you know, user, basically. The interesting part of it is the connectivity side. Obviously, we're used to our phones and tablets being always connected, and that is the benefit of having ARM-based, essentially phone or tablet-based hardware in a PC. because you then are into the realms of 24-hour battery life plus, as you do with a phone, and you'd have it always on the internet as well. So it sort of takes things to the next level, and that's what we've heard from Apple that we're going to have with the new Apple Silicon, that level of performance, and also that we're going to have that with what Qualcomm have announced, which is the 8cx Gen 2, nice and snappy there. But basically, these new chips from Qualcomm, also the stuff from Apple, potentially will have 5G laptops across the board. Definitely from Qualcomm, but potentially in the future, you know, we've talked before on the podcast about Macs potentially being 5G connected in the future. But that's the general way things are traveling. Intel have got a partnership with MediaTek to bring modems to laptops in the future, but we haven't sort of got there yet. So Intel are playing catch up in a way, like you say.
And the final question on this before we move on to the next topic is with the laptops that we've seen, because we've seen laptops this week from Acer, from Asus, from Lenovo, I think MSI have got some, you know, there's obviously these are starting to pull out already. Is there anything that stands out that we're like, oh, actually, that's quite cool and is already starting to use this technology to its advantage?
Well, I think the Asus ZenBook stuff is really interesting. That they're some of the best examples around. I just think what we're seeing on the model side of it, and also mentioned Dell's XPS 13 series, which is coming next month. The interesting thing is that actually they're more sort of evolutions of what we've seen before. They're not necessarily stand out. Laptops as such, but they will obviously have this improved performance and better battery life, and it's the battery life I think that's going to be the key thing going forward.
Now, Rick, Nvidia, tell us more about what's Nvidia up to this week.
It was a massive announcement from Nvidia specifically for PC gamers, because it was a big revolutionary leap for the graphics cards for 2020. We have the 3000 series graphics cards were announced, with the 3070, 3080, and 3090, which is a brand new category of graphics card, all announced. Now, these aren't just sort of like a mild upgrade to last year's RTX cards. These are a massive leap in spec and technologies. Nvidia has been working very, very hard in multiple areas to improve not only the performance of the graphics card for the developer, but also to introduce technologies that will directly benefit the gamer. Now, one of these, the main technology that they're kind of, this overarching new technology that they've added to the cards is a technology called Ampere. And we're still kind of finding out what that really means. But essentially, it makes the cards incredibly quick at processing and much more powerful, specifically for things like ray tracing, which is the use of better lighting in video games. The other technology, DLSS 2.0, I think we're on at the moment, which, I'm not sure what the acronym is, but the actual technology that it describes essentially upscales resolutions to sort of like 4K, even 8K, which is extraordinary, by doing very clever things to the pixels and very clever things to each frame to allow programmers to essentially make full 8K or full 4K games run much more economically than ever before. And it's very, very clever stuff.
Looking at the prices of some of these cards, they're almost as expensive, or if not more expensive, than what we're expecting the next gen consoles to be. Who are these cards aimed at, and what kind of games would you be expected to play on them that you couldn't just play on an average run-of-the-mill graphics card?
I think these cards are essentially a competitive shot across the bows of PlayStation and Microsoft. Now, both of those machines, the PS5 and the Xbox Series X, will be using AMD graphics for starters, which is obviously the big rival to Nvidia. And they will be introducing technologies like DLSS and ray tracing with those consoles. So you will get the equivalent of an RTX, a PC gaming experience with an Nvidia RTX gaming card inside those consoles. So NVIDIA's taken it one step further and now has a card, the 3090, which is mind-bogglingly expensive. It's in the £1,500 category.
Wow.
But it is capable of 8K 120 frames per second gaming. And that is basically saying, yeah, those next-gen consoles are going to be really good. But PC gamers, if they are willing to spend for it, I can have it even better.
And I suppose with games like Microsoft Flight Simulator, where you're expected to recreate the entire globe as you fly around in high definition, then you kind of need these powerful cards to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're seeing games like Flight Simulator, but also the latest Call of Duty, which adopt things like ray tracing at full 4K running natively. They need graphics cards that can cope, and these cards are definitely those. And we're not talking that all of these cards are ridiculously expensive. The RTX 370 comes in at around $499. So there are different grades of these cards. Plus, obviously, the first thing that happened as soon as the cards were announced is we started to get press releases from the gaming PC manufacturers saying that they're going to include them in even their laptops. There will be laptop versions of these cards, no doubt, sometime in the future, but also in their desktops. So you'll be able to buy PCs with them already in, so you don't have to think of the expense of and building your own machine. But I kind of see it also as hand in hand with the Intel announcement, because the Intel 11th gen processing will help run these cards in more efficient ways. So you know, if you're looking to build a PC, a gaming PC, that is, you're probably not got a better opportunity. The other thing that I think the 3090 really proved is that NVIDIA doesn't just want to be a gaming card specialist. It is looking at the 3090 as being for content creators, and even up to broadcast level, because you're talking about a card that can render 8K video as quickly as normal PCs and Macs, etc., can render 4K.
Which is pretty impressive. And so you can see that with YouTubers and Twitch gamers and all those kind of guys, this will probably fit quite nicely in with their workflow from that perspective. So, you know, does this mean that we'll see obviously more powerful PCs going forward, but do you think this will lead to a resurgence even more so in gaming, in PC gaming, over and above what Microsoft and Sony with PlayStation will be offering?
I think it will add to the snootery of PC gaming. Now, I'm a PC gamer, so I'm allowed to say that. But I think that PC gamers have always had a sort of like a, we are one level above you dumb console gamers attitude anyway, because they've always been at the forefront. The thing about having a gaming PC is you can just swap bits out and rebuild it as you go. I mean, it's like Trigger's broom. I remember having I had a PC 5 years ago that I still call the same PC, but literally every component is different, including the case. And that's the benefit of PC gaming, but it's also, you know, you are talking about, to have a decent PC gaming rig, even if you build it yourself, you're still talking around $2,000's worth of spend.
Right.
So
you've really got to like those Red Dead Redemptions and Call of Duties, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. And if we're expecting high prices for the Xbox Series X and PS5, but nowhere near that level.
No. Well, hopefully not. Otherwise, there'll be lots of disappointed people at Christmas who've saved up, because neither of those two have got a price anyway at the moment or an actual release date.
Exactly.
So it's still on the waiting game. But something that isn't going to be as expensive as we previously believed is going to be 5G. Now, up until now, 5G has always been refined to the premium flagship devices. We've obviously got the big player in the market, Apple, yet to announce a 5G device, but we're expecting that to happen at the end of this month, beginning of next month. But in the meantime, Qualcomm have had some interesting announcements this week as well, Dan.
Basically, their whole ethos over the last 6 months or thereabouts has been around bringing 5G to a wider audience, essentially. As you say, we've had it in numerous flagships, But over recent months, we have seen a move to cheaper handsets. We've had handsets like the OnePlus Nord, for example, which is a 5G handset in the mid-range. But they've now announced that 5G is going to be coming to the Snapdragon 400 platform, which is basically for cheap phones. And obviously, that's big for all markets, but it's going to be especially big for developing markets where cheaper phones are more normal. And you know, as 5G grows outside cities over the next year or two, you know, it's going to be even more key for countries that, you know, have previously only had 5G in certain areas.
And how have they done that? Is it just because they're making more of them and therefore they've reduced the cost, or is there something else that's in there to make this lower?
Well, it's efficiency as well, and part of it is that you know, really there hasn't, I mean, there still isn't the appetite for 5G in terms of a sort of huge rollout. You know, we're not even if you have a 5G handset now, you have to really hunt for the signal in an urban area. And it's been quite a slow burn, really, in terms of that. However, you know, a lot quicker than we saw with 4G. But in terms of these actual platforms, yes, it's about manufacturing volume and making it worthwhile to produce at a lower cost.
Now, I suppose that's the big thing, as you say. It's about getting 5G out there from a network perspective. It feels that it's coming, but it does feel slow. Do you think announcements like this about, you know, announcements like if Apple does go 5G, which everybody suggests is going to be the case, do you think that will help catapult 5G, certainly in the UK, but in the US and beyond?
Definitely.
Or are we still in that kind of waiting game of we need more handsets, but can't have more handsets until we get better network. We can't have better network until we get more handsets.
We're in a bit of both, really. So, you know, we are expecting Apple's iPhone 12 to be 5G across the board. We previously thought maybe it would be the iPhone 12 Pro, but actually it's going to be all the handsets, we understand. And we're going to have 5G handsets from Google as well with the Pixel announcement in October. So, you know, actually, you know, on the handset side of things, then we're going to be into the realms of all flagship handsets and sort of pretty much all new mid-range handsets launched will be 5G. So that on the handset side, you know, things are definitely on the up. In terms of networks, I think we've seen a bit of a slowdown in terms of announcements because of the global situation this year. You know, there were a lot of announcements early in the year when networks tried to hit their targets for what they previously announced were going to be the number of places they were going to cover. And, you know, but that sort of dried up a bit. I think we're in a period.
Well, I suppose if we're all at home on Wi-Fi or Wi-Fi 6, you don't necessarily need 5G at home at the moment, do you?
Definitely. And certainly from the UK, we have seen in recent days, EE announced a tariff, which is basically an all-you-can-eat tariff for iPhone, ahead of the iPhone 12 announcement, that gives you Apple TV Plus and Apple Music and Arcade as well. So there is sort of the networks are gearing up for these new handsets to be the sort of big catalyst for 5G. In the US as well, we've seen, you know, the T-Mobile Sprint issue resolved, where Sprint have been absorbed into T-Mobile, and that has catapulted things along there. But again, the sort of announcements of that's been the only recent announcement of a boost in coverage as such. But I think as we go into 2021, certainly if Mobile Congress takes place in February, March, that'll be a big sort of time for networks to really push their 5G networks on.
I think part of the problem personally is that also the Huawei issue has thrown a little spanner into the works in the fact that networks don't want to keep building. Certainly the networks that rely on Huawei technologies in their masts at the moment don't want to further introduce Huawei technology in new masts to continue the rollout, while there's still a massive uncertainty over whether or not ultimately they'll be able to use that technology.
Definitely. I think so. There's having to be a huge replanning effort from many of the networks EE especially, because they, you know, they had the most Huawei kit, we believe. And, you know, that will probably set things back a bit.
It's interesting that, as I say, that the three key themes for me that have come out of IFA this week have been about the technologies powering tomorrow's technologies. But there's obviously has been a few actual product announcements that you might eventually be able to go and buy. Rick, what's been your favourite or most interesting announcement that you spotted this week?
Philips certainly doubled down on IFA this year. They did a virtual event before IFA started, and it was an excellent event. It was really well done, where they essentially released or announced seven products. I mean, that's a big, that's a lot, really, in comparison to the other companies we've seen this week. Of those, I particularly like their new multi-room wireless audio system, which is interesting for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it adopts DTS Play-Fi, which actually means that it won't just work with Philips systems. It should also work with other DTS Play-Fi systems from other manufacturers. So that's quite a nice idea. You know, it's multi-room. You can have it in different rooms, or you can combine it as a home theater. Also, their new 935 OLED Plus TV actually is DTS Play-Fi compatible as well. So you can use that with its integrated sound system from Bowers & Wilkins as sort of like the front of your multi-room system with the rears behind. But interestingly, the two actual speakers they released as part of that system have LED lights in them as well. So the Ambilight system, which is those the lighting strips around the television that reflect the colours that are happening on screen at that time in light form behind, that will also be repeated in your speakers. Nice. So you can extend your entire room into some immersive viewing experience. And I really like the idea of that.
Yeah, that's really clever, actually. I'm a big fan of the Ambilight experience. I've got Philips Hue at home, and you know it does make a difference. And I think have they done some other stuff with Philips Hue side, the actual Hue as well, haven't they? The lights where you can then get a gradient light strip for your TV if it's not a Philips Ambilight TV to try and make it an Ambilight TV.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Philips Ambilight, if you haven't seen it before, go and try and get a trial of it. Obviously, now is not the greatest time for that. But there is a scheme where you can actually have a trial TV to see if you like Ambilight for a while, and then send it back if you don't. But it is brilliant. I mean, everyone I know who has seen Ambilight. Now, Philips Hue has released a system that if you can't have an Ambilight TV and you actually just want to keep your old TV, where you can stick the LED strips on the back of your existing television and it'll give you a similar effect. Now, what it won't do is it won't directly repeat the action that's on your TV in the same way that Ambilight does, but it does create a really good immersive lighting experience behind your set. And believe you me, for gaming, which is obviously what I'm most interested in, that's really brilliant. That really works well.
Dan, what's caught your eye this week?
Yeah, Samsung have announced the sort of second generation, although you might feel it was a slightly further generation than that, of the Z Fold 2, their main foldable phone. And actually, it's quite an improvement over the last model. But more interesting than that, you know, we've seen a real development in foldables, I think, and this is definitely a sign of that. It seems a lot more robust than the original one. It's still pretty expensive. It's £1,799. It's hardly a everyday phone. But you know, they're not that much more expensive than a top-notch flagship with maximum memory. You know, with the 11 Pro, the iPhone 11 Pro Max is, I think, 1,500. So it's not too far off that. But you know, I think we've also seen the Surface Duo as well launch recently, which is a slightly different approach of the two screens from Microsoft. And we talked about that recently on the podcast. But certainly, it seems that foldable devices are growing up. And as we move into next year and we see more of them, I think it's definitely going to become a big category, and this is a key sign of that.
Now, I noticed in the announcements, I think they're only making 5,000 of these, which kind of makes it either a super luxury, exclusive VIP product, or it means that they don't believe that they're going to sell enough of them to make any more of them than the 5,000.
Well, we think that was a bit of bluster, really. You know, I think the initial run was going to be 5,000. I get the impression, you know, certainly I don't think they'll, you know, shy about making more if they can sell more. But also maybe, you know, as we move into 2021 and we get, you know, the Galaxy S11, perhaps we'll get yet another version of this.
Right, there we go. So I'm going to be, final question for both of you, because I'd be remiss not to ask this, is what have you missed about IFA this week?
Curryverst. I particularly like the Curryverst in Berlin.
Dan?
Seeing people.
There we go. You see, all this modern technology, and we still need a good Curryverst and a good pint of beer with some friends. Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time, pip pip.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.